The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You're listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast, presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. My co-host for this one, Juan Liriano at Juan on MLB and Matthew Holmes at MLB at Matt. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Boston Red Sox break their four-game losing streak, winning 6-2. Behind a dominant performance by their starting pitcher, Ranger Suarez. Before we get into it, temperature check. Matt, how are you feeling?
Well, we finally made it, huh? We finally got to the 30-win mark. We are the last American League team to get there. Feels good to get to the 30-win mark. It was a good game overall. Obviously, this team has been struggling, lost five in a row, so good to get a win on the board. The pitching was strong, some timely hitting. We had a long ball mixed in there, so it's nice. You know, the team actually improves to 18-18 on the road, clean 500 on the road. It seems the farther they get from Fenway, the better they play. So what the heck, I was concerned coming into this series with the way the Mariners pitch. The pitching staff, I think, leads the league in strikeouts, big ballpark, and we've seen what this offense does in our home ballpark. So always good to get a win. I'm a little surprised the game went the way it did, but a well-played game by the boys.
One.
It can't get any worse than what it's been. I feel really good going into the weekend now, getting this win here. The Mariners have struggled against left-handed pitchers. They've been their weakest, and we're throwing nothing but left-handed pitchers this entire weekend. So feeling really good about our chances to win the series. It's good to get the first one out the way. Let's see if we can get tomorrow and Sunday, but feeling really good because, again, they're struggling against lefties, and that's all we're throwing at them.
I used to be like a 1.9, 1.8. We've had negative numbers for temperature checks. I'm really impressed that we're able to win for Ranger Suarez. This guy should not be 2-3 right now with a 3.2 ERA. It shouldn't be happening. But this is the epitome of what happens when you have a pretty good starting rotation, a good run prevention unit, but a crap run scoring unit. So you're RPU is great. Your RSU sucks. And it was nice to see a change of pace. And, you know, we've talked about it before. Every single time this team wins, it's technically not good for the team. But I will say, if you're going to win like this, do it the way that you do it. Today, personally, for me, Team USA won, Brazil won, the Red Sox won. So no complaints for me. And Twitter's undefeated today, but we'll get to that later. So why don't you take us away, Matt? What was the first thing you want to talk about?
Heck of a day for you having here, Charlie. Ranger was dealing tonight for most of that game. I thought we could be witnessing some history tonight. He was mowing down that Mariners lineup. He came into tonight with only two wins, only three losses. But, you know, whenever he gets on the mound, the team never seems to score for him. So good to see that we put up five runs for him while he was pitching in another one after he came out of the game. He's now 3-3, and after tonight's performance, his ERA actually dropped slightly below 3. So he's sporting a 2.93 ERA with a 1.12 whip. I mean, the guy's been pitching very well. He's been earning his money. I know it's just the first year, but, yeah, he goes out there and gives you a chance to win every time, which is all you can ask out of your starting pitcher. So only 5 Ks tonight, which was interesting because he had a string of 4 consecutive strikeouts between the first and second innings. So kind of interesting that he ended up only with 5 and then got into some trouble in the 6th inning. You know, that was the end of the night. But, yeah, he took a no-hitter into the 7th inning for most of the game. I'm thinking it was 1-0, and I'm thinking the whole game, well, Rangers either going to go the distance here with this no-hitter or we're going to lose it in epic fashion because we were only up 1-0 most of that game, and I'm thinking this is just too close. we've been known to have these type of games where we're in it until we completely blow it. So, and hey, maybe he even throws a no-no and we lose the game, right? When you only score one run, it's definitely possible to this team can find ways to lose. But yeah, it's hard to lose six in a row. I thought Ranger pitched great, you know, locating his pitch as well, a couple walks in there, but those were close pitches that were ball fours, and I think most of those were on full counts as well. So, yeah, I'd love to see a starting pitching performance like that, and we put up some runs for him. We'll get into the offense a little bit, but yeah, Ranger's been dealing all year. I mean, we're mid-June right now, ERA under 3, 1.12 whip is pretty elite right there. So his Ks per 9 slightly under 9 right now, I think, but like I said, he's been earning his money. He's been earning the contract. Interesting pivot, obviously, from Bregman back then. But I'm not complaining when he gets on the mound.
Yeah, to hear Lou Maloney mention the 8-0 decisions, if I'm not mistaken, it was 8-0 decisions that he's had so far. He's been pitching well. It's just the offense hasn't been there to really support him. So to see him go out there, pitch the way that he did against a better team. They are a much better team than the Boston Red Sox. I mean, who isn't, really? And he goes out there, he pitches the way that they did, and the offense backed him up. It's a great showing. At one point, I think he went, what, 4 or 5 innings without them getting a hit. Like, he was dealing. And then you look at the fact that, I mean, they had a recipe, you know, for them to win, at least throughout this weekend, especially tonight, because this Seattle team is not they don't play well against left-handed pitchers. And you have a guy that's been dealing like Ranger Suarez really the entire season, right? And he went out there and he showed it yet again. Really impressed with what he did tonight. Just giving the Red Sox that boost that they really needed. Because, I mean, as we all know, the Boston Red Sox right now are the joke of the town right now. So to see him go out there and pitch the way that he did, man, I was impressed.
Ranger Suarez in his last 7 starts is 0-1. 6 no decisions. That's a lot of NDs next to his name for someone who's been pitching his balls off this year. I mean, he's been pitching phenomenally. And like you mentioned, the K9 is right around 9. It's under it, but it's close to it. I think before today's game, I think he was at 9, but he struck out 5 and 6 and change today. Really happy that he got the win. Well-earned, well-deserved. You go 6 innings and no-hit baseball. Your only base runner was the guy who had almost 60, or no, he had 60 home runs last year, right? So, I mean, that's not a pretty bad guy to you know, draw the walk. He's been out for a long period of time. But let's be honest here. I mean, 6 innings from Ranger Suarez, I mean, they fronted him only 1 run that entire time off of a solo home run. That's it. Your only run for the longest time, no hits for one team. Darbin had a solo shot, and I think Abreu had a single. That was it. Done. You know, so really, really happy for him. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Honestly, this guy just needs to get the support, and he just wasn't getting it for the longest time. Matt, since this is your talking point, if I'd give you the floor to wrap it on him before we move on to the next one.
Yeah, like I said, he's been as advertised. I have a couple of friends who are big Phillies fans, and they were saying that we're going to love him. We're going to love how he pitches and the way he deals on the mound. He definitely seems like a super competitor. Even when he gets into some trouble, he finds a way to kind of get out of it. I think the only knock on him so far this year is he hasn't really been able to go deep into games consistently. Just doing the math really quick. After tonight, 76 and a third innings, 14 starts. That's just under 5.5 innings, right? So call it like 5 1/3, 5 2/3 innings. He always seems to have these innings where he either gets into trouble or ends up throwing a lot of pitches, right? And that's the type of pitcher he is. I hate to call him a nibbler because he seems to be getting away with it, right? And he has made a career out of it, but he just locates. And sometimes when you're flirting with the strike zone like that, sometimes the pitches go your way and sometimes they don't. So I think that's kind of the only knock on him is a high pitch count, not really going deep into ball games. But again, he gets on the mound and for the most part gives your team a chance to win. It's not his fault that we can't score more than 2 or 3 runs a game. And when we do, that's when you give him a chance to win the game. And the way the pitching staff is, you know, that number is still 4, 4.5, right? 4 to 5 runs a game, 4.5 game. You're going to win a lot more than you lose with this pitching staff if that's what you're scoring, right? So So we hit that mark tonight, and it showed. And we almost had a shutout. Canley kind of blew it, gave up the long ball in the ninth inning there. But by then it was too little, too late for the Mariners. Obviously, I was rooting for the shutout. Would have been nice for the staff to get. You always love to get a shutout. Juan, I didn't realize the Mariners numbers versus lefty. So now I'm feeling great about Early and Toley. I mean, all we have is lefties. But yeah, like I said, it's weird. The farther they get from Fenway, the better they play. So I'm not subscribing to the comeback kids right now just yet, but in every win, it feels like, well, that's just going to extend Breslow's tenure. But at the end of the day, that was a fun ball game to watch. Finally, it's good. A Friday night game. We're staying up late and they gave us something to root for. So I'll take it.
Let me ask you a question. If your starting pitcher allows 0 runs, 1 run, or 2 runs, should he get the win?
Yeah. I mean, quality start is 6-3. I like to think 5 innings, 2 runs or less, 6 or 3. But yeah, if you're going 6 innings, 3 runs, then you should win the game. That was certainly our success. I mean, you think of a guy like Tim Wakefield, won 200 games with like a 4.5 ERA, doing just that, going 6-3. Right. So yeah, absolutely. But not with this offense. So asterisk next to my answer, not with the current Red Sox offense, but yeah, right. If the pitcher gives you that spread, you should win the ball game for him.
That's five no decisions. He had four plus in one of those games. But I mean, I have a feeling if he went 5 or 6 innings that game, he still wouldn't have gotten the win. You know, it's crazy how many no decisions this guy has. I mean, you see a 2-3 record, a 3.21 ERA, I think, before the game started. You're probably thinking he's probably had 7 starts. Not as many as he's had. He's had double that. He shouldn't be 2-3. So, yeah, brutal situation. But thankfully, we were able to escape with 1 run of support for 6-plus innings. And thankfully, it worked out. Juan, anything else you want to add?
No. I mean, listen, we're going to get into the second guy here with Caleb Durbin, but this is a Craig Breslow guy, and he's been, again, to the standards of what we're asking him to do, he's been great. He's been, going out there, giving it his best each and every time. And tonight was just one of those examples of him showing us what he can do. Just really proud of what he did tonight and getting that win for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Juan, what's the next talking point we have, good sir?
Caleb Durbin. I mean, Matt, you mentioned Craig Breslow. This is another Craig Breslow guy. And it's difficult for us because we are the Fire Breslow podcast, but yet we're over here giving credit to the guys that Craig Breslow brought in, right? Caleb Durbin is that other guy. All of a sudden, he's a home run hitter. 4 home runs in his last 7 games. Hit a home run last night against the Blue Jays. Hit one tonight. He hit 2 home runs in a loss, albeit, but still 2 home runs, right? Like he's been balling. And it doesn't surprise me, of course, that he went outside of Boston, and that's when he started improving his bat, went back to what worked for him in Milwaukee, and it's been working. So I'm just really proud of what I've seen from Caleb Durbin. You know what you're going to get from him defensively, because that's why, Craig Breslow brought him in, was because of what he can bring defensively. But to see him continue to improve, right? Beginning of the season, we definitely felt like he just wasn't the guy at third base, had no power, felt like he was reaching, just wasn't his swing, because of course the Red Sox were basically destroying every single player on the roster. He goes out, works with someone outside of the Red Sox organization, and here he is. He's been balling since the beginning of June. So just really excited to see what he's doing. Of course, against coupled with the defense, can this offense keep that up is always the question. Can he keep this up? We'll have to wait and see here, but yeah, really excited to see what he saw, what he did tonight.
Matt.
I mean, it's a wild ride, right? Like you said, Breslow identifies this guy. He gives up a pretty solid package. He brings him in and he said, hey, this is our third baseman of the future. We lost Devers. We missed out on Bregman. This is the guy I believe in. This is our new guy. And yeah, defensively, not much to complain about, right? I don't exactly know how they calculate defensive runs saved and outs above average, but he's towards the top of the league in both of those. So we'll take it. When I watch it, yeah, there's some balls that maybe if he's a little bit taller that go over his head, he might be able to get, but for the most part, he makes all the plays. And yeah, isn't it interesting, right, that the guy comes in and he is the worst hitter in baseball for the better part of 2 months and then goes outside the organization to seek some help, to seek some tips, and all of a sudden, wouldn't you know, it starts turning around, starts to hit with a little bit of power. His home run tonight, that was back-to-back at-bats with home runs, right, because his last at-bat in the last game he went yard, and then his first at-bat tonight goes yard. Really nice sound off the bat. Heard the pop right off the bat. He said, oh, this one could go. You saw the outfielder just keep running towards the fence. Barely got out of here, but that's a dinger, right? So I'm encouraged by the turnaround. I mean, yeah, it took that second hit tonight to get his average north of 200, which, man, it's tough. But he's got about 20 or so extra base hits already. Like, he has, I think, 15 doubles. He had a double tonight, too. So his doubles are in the teens. You know, homers are starting to add up now. I think that's got to be 5 total. So, yeah, I mean, what does that say about our organization when he has to go outside the organization to do that? But, look, we need our guys to perform well. We have him. It's only his second year in his career, so we have him under control over the next 5-6 years. And whether we like it or not, we need him to do well, whether it's to flip him in the future or for him to help us win ball games in the Red Sox uniform. And so, yeah, it's encouraging to see, but definitely another kind of stain on Breslow's resume there for sure, and the whole organization and what we've got going on top to bottom. But we'll take it for sure. It's been an interesting turnaround, and I'm not complaining when he's starting to hit home runs and play it mixed with that defense. And now you got, you know, a decent little ball player at times.
This was, in my eyes, probably Breslow's replacement for Rob Refsnyder. You know, you have a lefty killer in there who's recognized as a veteran in the clubhouse. He gets it. He knows his role. He's not a pretender. He goes to Seattle. He signs a 1-year deal. I forget how much it was, $4 million or something. And we get Durbin. And at the beginning of the year, I'm not going to lie, man, all of us were haters. Even before you guys both joined, this entire pod was like, what the is going on, man? What in the world did we give up Kyle Harrison for these two junk balls? It's just terrible. What are we doing? And only in the last 2 weeks have I been like, I'm still not happy about the trade. But finally, he's starting to show some level of relevance, because guy's first home run was off of 42-mile-an-hour Ephus pitch. And I'm sitting there like, this guy had 11 home runs last year. That's his first one. We might not get another one if he can only hit 42 miles an hour. But he had a 2-homer game. He's had a couple other home runs this month. He's up to, I think it was number 5 home runs now. So do I think this is him turning it around? I don't know. Am I really happy with the level of production because there hasn't been too many bright spots? You goddamn right I am, because you can count on one hand how many good moments there are in this lineup. And he seems to continue to be, at least right now, over the last couple days, games, weeks, one of the bright spots. He just got back over 200. He's over 200. The Mendoza line is met and we're over it now. So thankfully, we are not absolutely blowing it with him at third base or whatever he's thinking he's doing. He's starting to hit the ball. He's playing decent defense. I'm okay with it. You know, I'm okay with Durbin right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, baseball is a game of adjustments. As I mentioned, he was the worst hitter in baseball for almost 2 months, and he started making adjustments, and they seem to be working out for him. Same with Meyer. That toe tap seems to be having some success with that, and it's difficult without veteran presence in the lineups for these guys to make adjustments, I guess, confidently. But yeah, I've been saying it all year. They haven't been playing well. The offense hasn't been playing well, but nothing has changed. Now you're starting to see guys make some adjustments in their swings. Marcelo Meyer struggling with the off-speed pitch, starts with a toe tap. Durbin struggling to hit anything. Well, let me go to Waltham and go to this hitting institute outside of the organization. And he's doing whatever he's doing. He's definitely being more productive, although how he was batting before, it's hard to be that least productive as he has been. But look, the guys have to continue making adjustments. That's how you become a good big leaguer. A lot of guys have success like right away when you come into the league, and then they figure it out. You can't hit a heater, you can't hit the slider, whatever, and then they make you hit that. So we've seen it a lot where guys have a flash in the pan success, then the book's out on them. And the guys that make those adjustments and figure that part out, those are the guys that have long standing careers.
Yeah, I feel like if the Red Sox allowed these players to really to just play their game, right, especially at home, as we know, they're struggling. They're the worst, if not the worst team in Major League Baseball at home. Allow these players to use that left field wall. And Durbin is one of these guys. You bring him in from Milwaukee. You try to adjust his swing. Why not just work with what worked in Milwaukee, right? And I think that him going outside of the organization, that's him telling the organization, hey, I kind of want to go back to what worked for me back at Milwaukee. And at least for the month of June, it's working. And hopefully it kind of works around the team, right? Like, hey, let these guys be the players that they were before they came along. Contreras being one of those guys. Right now, he is our power bat. So let him optimize that left wall. Let him pull the ball because it's working for him. So hopefully this is something that this organization looks at and says, hey, let's look at what works for these guys, what's worked for them in the past, and let's go back to that. But of course, we know that these people, they try to be the smartest people in the room, and they'll look for other ways to help these players when in fact all they should be doing is just letting them play their game.
If you're not following Driveline and you're going out and getting your own professional coach to help you and you seem to be doing really well without Driveline, why in the hell is one of the players who's not the home run hitter, why is he going out and getting another professional coach to assist him because it's not working? Guys, it is not working. It hasn't been working. Driveline's one of the dumbest things that the Boston Red Sox bought into. And if I'm not mistaken, the guy who helped the Red Sox with it is gone. He's no longer there. He's taken another position somewhere else. Even he's like, yeah, I don't think it's working. Caleb Dermott got his old coach. Now he's hitting home runs. But everyone else can't do anything. You got a plethora of players on your team that have one home run or no home runs still. And this Driveline thing, you have got to can it, man. You've just got to kibosh it. Be done. Be done. Because if players like Caleb Durbin, who are not your top two, three hitters on the team, are not using it and they're succeeding, why in God's name is anyone buying into this still? Breslow needs to have some accountability and say, you know what? I was wrong on this one. I'm wrong a lot, but it starts with you and you've got to admit your faults. And if you don't admit your fault, man, I don't know. I mean, you're still the GM of the Boston Red Sox, president of baseball operations, however you want to look at it, for so many more days. I have no idea. Every single day that he's still here, it gives me, you know, credence that anyone can do anything, really. If this guy is still the president of baseball operations for the Boston Red Sox, if someone says, I want to be this, I want to be that, you know what? You probably could. If someone were to say, I want to become a butterfly, it could happen because Breslow could still be the president of baseball operations for the Red Sox. That's where we're at right now. Anything else you guys want to add to that?
No, I mean, I don't understand why he still has a job. They're just so bad. I've never had a team been rooting for the Sox that have been this bad this early, but I still don't see him making any changes soon. It was so odd about the Driveline stuff that they just, apparently a month ago that guy stepped down and nobody knows why and or for what reason. And it seems to be kept under wraps. But again, who knows what's going on in there? Clearly the numbers aren't lying to us. They're the worst offensive team in baseball. And we got to win tonight. And that broke a 5-game losing streak, our third 5-game losing streak of the season. So Merlone had a great point that you have to avoid getting swept. We've been swept 5 times. That's 5 wins if you just win one of those games of the series. How big of a difference would it be if we had 5 more wins right now and being, 8 or 9 under 500 instead of 13 or 14 under 500, which is still not a great spot. But in this terrible mess of an American League, you're actually still within striking distance at that 8 or 9. And so just to completely get your doors bashed in every game and getting swept like that, we haven't even hit officially summer yet, June 21st, and the season's basically over. It's just,
it's frustrating. It's a great point. I think that was around the same time where he was asking Dave O'Brien, "Oh, you went to the World Cup game? Did you bring anybody?" And he's like, yeah, I just sat in my room. You know, I just sat there. I was like, this is awkward. This is getting kind of awkward right now. But then he like somehow flipped it around to, oh, but did you want to watch the Open or something? Whatever it was. But you're totally right. I mean, you think about it. Hindsight's 2020. The game's already over. But man, oh man, if we had five games up. I mean, we'd still find a way to squander those five games later on during the season. But still, at least right now, we'd have like a little bit more feeling of control, a little feeling that we actually belong. We're, what, 12-25 at home? I'm not looking at it. I have to look at the Boston Red Sox schedule to see, or the standings rather, to see where we are. I think we're 12-25 at home, and we're 18-18 away. We have 12 wins. There's no team worse than the Boston Red Sox at home. The next worst team is the San Francisco Giants, who are 14-20. We'll win 20, but it's going to take us a while. Anything else you guys want to add to that?
Just that there were some other bright spots in the lineup tonight. Sadon had another double there. He's been having a great season. And Marcelo Meyer with the Michael Jordan flu game tonight, apparently was sick, scratching the lineup. All of a sudden back in the lineup, and maybe that made the difference. 3 RBI on the night. A couple nice base hits. Hit the ball pretty hard in that last sitting there. Double over the left fielder's head. So, yeah, good to see him, like I said before, making those adjustments to the toe tap. Since I mentioned in on the show that never aired on Tuesday night that his numbers from the offensive perspective since becoming a shortstop are – not horrendous, right? I mean, his numbers are very bad overall heading into that stretch, but they're pretty like comparable now. I think he's batting around 250, 260, probably higher now after tonight since coming into shortstop. And so with the glove that he has, that's tolerable, right? If you can put up, you know, 260 batting average, his OBP was just shy of 300 again, probably a little bit higher after tonight. And then, you know, just more hits than strikeouts, I think I saw. So ever since the toe tab, ever since moving to shortstop, I'm not sure what it is, combination of both. But with the defense that he plays, that is good enough or sufficient enough offense, I think, out of a player like that to, quote unquote, build around. We need a lot of pieces. We need almost a whole new infield. But with his defense at the most important position at shortstop, if he's batting 265 with an on-base percentage, flirting around 300, hopefully north of 300, while he continues to figure it out, I mean, Bogaerts really struggled his first year, first full season in the big leagues. A lot of guys do. So, you know, it's going to take 500, 600, 700 at-bats for him to really understand the game, see pitches. He didn't see a lot of at-bats in the AAA level, I believe. So he's still a young player learning on the go. And ever since moving to shortstop, I'll take those offensive numbers with the glove that he has. And, you know, you got to find some pop around him. I'm not saying Durbin is him, but it was just like I said, a little Michael Jordan flu game action from Meyer tonight. That was good to see.
Yeah, he's a young player, so you've got to let him play. You've got to let him learn. It's hard because I've criticized this guy so many times. IKF has been playing well. He's deserved the playing time on his end as well. So if these are both your shortstops, you're going to have to sit one for the other. Second base is wide open, right? So figure out a way to have both of these guys out there. He's young. He'll be able to figure it out. He needs to learn, right? And the way that you learn is by going out there and playing. This is a lost season, despite what the organization wants to tell you. This is a lost season. So this is the time, as I mentioned, even at the first month of the season, I said, let these young guys play. Bring up all your prospects and let them play. Let them feel out the major leagues. And this is what you have to do with Marcelo Meyer because he needs to learn. There's a lot of room to grow on his end. And the way that you do that is by allowing him to go out there and work on his mechanics. Let him face left-handed pitchers. Like, why does it matter at this point? Let him go out there and face these left-handed pitchers. Just let him play every single day. So it's good to see what he did today, especially as you mentioned, Matt, the Michael Jordan flu game. He wasn't even supposed to play, and literally minutes before the game, we hear, well, Marcelo Meyer is actually going to play because IKF is dealing with something as well. So really good to see him go out there and do what he did tonight.
Yeah, and Charlie, real quick before you get into your thing, I just want to, I know it's still early in the season, but I feel like it's worth noting, at least while it's a true statement. Meyer had kind of an MO of injuries. He had that wrist injury towards the end of last year. an injury-prone sort of minor league career as well. So a lot of the question marks around him were his longevity. Can he stay healthy? And honestly, if him and Roman came up around the same time, he's been playing more games, especially this year. He's been going through, obviously, struggles. Can't hit a changeup for 2 months, but at least he's in there every day, or every day that they allow him to play, he's able to play, right? Because for a while he was getting stonewalled and not in those lineups daily, and now he's been getting daily run at his natural position where he plays the best defense on the field, or best defender outside of Sedan, maybe Abreu, I guess, in the outfield. But yeah, I mean, as long as he stays healthy, he may be able to figure it out, and I feel like his ceiling grows a little bit with the more opportunities he gets at the plate.
This is fun. I mean, I had a great day today, guys. I mean, noon o'clock, Team USA is playing. That's for me anyways. I'm not on the, you know, East Coast. So you guys, I think it was 3 o'clock for you guys. Then I get to watch Brazil play. Mom's side of the family's from there. Won that one against Haiti. I feel bad. I got my Haitian buddies were, you know, disappointed, obviously, but that's you're playing against a football superpower. Then the Red Sox are shutting out the Mariners 5-0, 6-0. That it was great. It was awesome. And then obviously Canley gave up the 2-run homer, but still 3-0. And then Twitter just undefeated, just had to throw up another W for me because it was legendary. As you guys already mentioned, Matt, you already mentioned, Marcelo Meyer was not supposed to play today. His first 3 RBI game today. Now, Castillo just imploded. We scored 4 runs on 5 hits in that inning. We scored 2 runs on 5 hits the whole rest of the game, not counting the solo shot. You still got a double-double in the ninth, a couple miscellaneous hits for the rest of the game. Castillo looked rattled. He looked rattled. And it didn't, I mean, they're talking about like his arm angle's really deceptive and he has like a really good job and they're doing something with the rotation and this, that, and the other, whatever. The pitch that Marcelo Meyer hit, that's a professional hit. That's a really, really well-timed swing, well-plated, just well-played ball in a right field. You knock in one, should have been one. Jaron Duran ran past the stop sign and ended up scoring. But like even Cal Raleigh misplayed a ball that allowed Sadon to score the second run. There was like a lot of messes there, right? But that was his first multi-hit game since, I don't know, it feels like April. I don't think he had one in, but it wasn't that. It was May. It was late May. It just feels like it's been so long because in the month of June, he's hitting 172. It was an absolute disaster. So it was great to see him get a couple of hits. He plated 3 runs today for the first time this year. And every once in a while, you're going to get a player that sets a little professional record for himself. But then you have the people on Twitter that just hate the world. And I think the world hates them back. And it's just so epic to watch people implode because we know that the Red Sox right now are struggling, right? There's no question. Our hitters can't hit. Sometimes we make some poor decisions, poor time still in base, bad fielding attempt, catchers behind home plate aren't field, you know, they're not playing the ball right, and we're possibly losing a game. Like that's more recent. It's just really unlucky. But then you go out, there are some people out there. They actually posted, and I'm not going to mention the person because they're irrelevant, but they actually posted getting upset because a professional ball player shared a photo that his girlfriend shared of her just being proud of her boyfriend. And that's the reason why he wasn't doing well. How much of an idiot are you? And then you had the audacity to not only double down, but then take the credit for why he did well because you woke him up. You are the biggest clown on Twitter. You're a reject and you're probably still single. Good luck paying for it. If you know what I'm saying, I don't know who's going to volunteer for that, but man, oh man, I'm 4-0 today. I mean, it was just amazing. I'm sharing the comments with you guys. I know I'm 3 hours behind you. I'm sharing the comments. I'm like, This is just gold. I mean, box office gold, dude. What a clown. I'm happy for Marcelo Meyer. Lord knows the pressure's on his shoulders, as it's been on Roman Anthony's. Boston put all of their weight on top of their youngsters because there was no leadership. There was no veterans here. You relied on trading for Wilson Contreras. You relied on Jaren Duran to all of a sudden be like a 3,100 guy. Even if he's not that, right? If I personally don't think Jaren Duran's a 3,100 candidate. I still think he's a vet in the clubhouse. If I'm getting into a fight with someone, I want him behind me because I know if it's going down, he's going to mess somebody up. Wilson Contreras, same thing. Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, I don't see them as the type of guys that would start something. They're still too green, right? This is just an unfair amount of pressure that was basically forced onto them because there was no solution. That's it. There was no other option, and it was really, really unfortunate. But here we are, 2026. You don't invest in offense. You go out and get your pitchers. Congratulations. You scored the second least amount of runs by one, and you've allowed the fifth least amount of runs in professional baseball. You went way too much to one side with your analytics, and you completely abandoned your offense. Pitching wins ball games, but pitching can only win when you actually score runs for your team. I could go on, but I'm going to let you guys go a little bit too, because this was just a really fun evening for me.
Well, what was it? Bad pizza, bad wings on the Jordan game. Maybe that guy, did he send a bad pizza over to Myers? Did he get Myers sick so he can come and overperform today? Yeah, I don't know. You said it, Charlie, right? This is no secret. It's just a young club. I kind of thought it was getting a little sketchy there in the seventh inning, right when they had this bases loaded and J.P. Crawford up. And then they flashed the stat that he's got like 6 grand slams in his career and 90 RBI with the bases loaded. And I just thought to myself, my first thought was, wow, Caleb Durbin doesn't even have 90 RBI in his whole career, I bet. And then I started kind of browsing Baseball Reference, and guess what? J.P. Crawford has, with his 90 RBI and with the bases loaded, obviously, 10-year of career, but he never has had more than 65 RBIs in his season. He has more than Gasper. That 90 RBI is more than Gasper, Durbin, Meyer, Monasterio, and Narvaez have in their entire career. Not combined, but individually, of course. That's 5 guys in your starting lineup that have less than 90 career RBI. I think Durbin was the leader of that bunch with 80 RBI. So, I mean, how much more inexperienced can you get from an offensive perspective? Wilson Contreras, your only legitimate veteran at this point. We've been giving Sadon his praise and his flowers all season long, and he's earning them. Flirting with kind of a 300 average, high 280s. So, yeah, I mean, I don't understand why guys like Sam Kennedy go on Nesson and say that they're surprised, or people are saying they're surprised that we're the worst offense in the league. It's no surprise. I mean, the surprise would be if we actually had a decent offense, because none of these guys have any experience at all in the big leagues. I mean, who is really underperforming? I mean, Duran had one good year. And he's underperformed from that one good year ever since. He had a great all-star run there in 2024, and that's it. Wilson Contreras is probably having his best year of his career. But outside of that, I mean, Sadon, we've said, is taking a step forward. Abreu, can you say he's having a down year? He's kind of been exactly the type of player he's been. Durbin, a down year compared to what? His rookie season? I mean, we don't know what type of ball player he's going to be. So, the catchers, don't get me started on the catchers. We've got 3 catchers. None of them are major league caliber catchers. I think Narvaez is the most defensive catcher, but we don't even give him a chance to play. So, you know, Roman Anthony, our hero, Lord and Savior, we don't really know what kind of ball player he is. He seemed to regress when he was playing this year. So, yeah, I just, you know, I'm surprised we scored 6 runs tonight. And I guess we should enjoy it while it lasts, because we may not get many more this weekend out there.
This season, and I'm glad you brought up the pressure that they applied on most of these young players like Roman Anthony. They went into the season and said, hey, Roman, We're not going to bring back any of the guys that were here leading you to become the player that you, at least what you produced while you were healthy when you first came up last season. We're not going to bring any of those guys up because we're going to put everything on your shoulders. Like, really? You're going to do that to him? You're going to do that to Marcelo Meyer? You're going to do that to Caleb Durbin that you brought in his second season? It was unfair. We knew what we needed. I know Bregman's been struggling, but we needed a guy like that because it's not just about what he can produce on the field, but it's also what he does in the clubhouse and what he can do for guys like Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer, who are the future of this team, whether we like it or not. Those are the guys that are going to lead the way in years to come. So my hope is let these young players play next season, if there is a season, bring in some guys that can lead the way to take that pressure away from them, to really allow them to just grow into the players that we believe them to be. The way that you do that is by bringing in guys that can lead the way, take the pressure away from them, and just allow them to play. So really, I've got nothing else. I feel like, again, we've mentioned before, this is a lost season. So I just want to see these young guys grow. These are our guys. I want to see them grow. I want to see them improve. And the only way to do that is by letting them play.
You can't really say much else after that. I mean, this is a team that needs a lot of patience, and the missing variable is leadership too. I mean, if we have leadership and honestly, one or two big bats, man, that's it. Bring in one veteran bat, someone who knows what's going on, bring another power bat, man, you have yourself a contender. You really do. I mean, your rotation, your bullpen, while the bullpen's not perfect, your rotation is showing you how great things could be if you just had a little bit of offense. And Matt, 5 wins. Maybe you have 6 or 7 wins with better offense. 7 wins, we're actually pretty darn relevant. Where does that put us in the AL East if we have a variance of +7? Well, we're 8.5 out, so third place. But as far as wild card is concerned, 7 games actually gives us a wild card spot. So, yeah, I mean,
They've got 30 wins right now. So if you had another 5, 6, or 7, you'd probably jump in over a handful of teams right there. Right. Now you're 4 games back or 3 games back, but you're only 3 or 4 teams in between you and a playoff spot. Right. Right now it's the entire American League except the Angels. So
you could have had Pete Alonso if you gave him 1 extra year. And instead, I think this is Jason Kelly that mentioned this on a recent show. You could have had Pete Alonso. You balked at giving him another year because you didn't want to pay, because probably wouldn't have aged that well. But at that point, who else was on your books? You need that bat is tailor made for Fenway Park. That's good for 25 home runs at home, 20 home runs at home, minimum, right? He's going to mash 40, 100, 40, 110 easy. Yeah, he hits 230. Who cares? You're not hiring for a sexy batting average. You're hiring him to bang home runs and mash. 5 years. Dude, he's worth 5.150. He's worth 5.170. Like, stupid.
You play half your games at Fenway. You look at the Yankees, and I hate the Yankees. But you look at the Yankees, they build a roster based on where they play, which is Yankee Stadium, that short porch at right field. They have a whole bunch of lefty hitters, and they build their roster that way. You build a roster that fits your home park. And as you mentioned, Pete Alonso was tailor-made for Fenway. And of course, they want it to be cheap. They didn't want to spend the money. That's really what it comes down to with this organization. They don't want to spend. It's easy. The formula is right there in front of you, and they just choose to take the route of, where can we save some money? And that's what they did here.
It's 100% financially related, Charlie. They can tell us that it's because, we didn't want to pay Alonso $30 million when he's 35 years old, because I think that would have been his last year of the contract. So. But then they go around and trade prospects for Wilson Contreras, who is 34 years old right now, and we have him under control for 2 more years. So we're going to be paying him next year when he's 35 years old, $13 million less than we'd be paying Alonso at 35 years old. Except next year we would have 31-year-old Alonso. Instead, we have 35-year-old Wilson looking at us for 2027, and then a club option for 2028. Which, let's be honest, they're probably not going to pick that up because they're going to say $20 million. Nah, we can't pay a 36-year-old that much money. So it's definitely money related. They can tell us that, oh, we didn't want to pay Alonso at 35 years old, but then they turn around and go get a 34-year-old first baseman. I mean, it doesn't make sense. Just like all the other moves that he made don't make sense. I mean, I gave we have to give some credit to the Rangers Suarez signing. He's been pitching well, but the team did not need another left-handed starting pitcher. They needed a right-handed bat, a right-handed infield and bat. And you added another lefty who gave us a good outing tonight, and we finally scored enough runs to get him his third win of the season. But you know, we're still bottom of the basement. We're the last team to make it to 30 wins in the American League. So,
all right, let's shift it, right? A little bit of positivity after we just opened it up 1-0. You got Conley early against Emerson Hancock and Peyton Tolley against Logan Gilbert. I sadly don't have us winning either one of those two games. And that's just me. Until the Boston Red Sox show me that they're capable of winning on a consistent basis, I can't in good conscience pick the Red Sox to win. So I have them losing games 2 and 3. I don't know about you guys.
I understand that, especially looking at Early's latest performances. Last one against the Rangers, he went 4 2/3, 11 hits, 6 earned runs, allowed 2 home runs. He's allowed 1.8 home run per 9, 14 home runs in 73 innings pitched. So he's been struggling. Despite Seattle struggling against left-handed pitchers, I don't know if I can trust Connelly Early tomorrow. I do like Peyton Tolley on Sunday, but tomorrow with how Early's been pitching, man, I mean, you even look at Hancock for Seattle. He went out there in his last outing, 4 innings pitched, 9 hits, 6 earned runs. This is for you right here, right? But what have we learned about this team? When you think that they can go out there and win a series, they'll go out there and prove you wrong. What's worked for me this season is every time I've picked against them, they've won. So I will pick against them yet again in hopes that, you know, kind of.
What a guy.
Yes, yes.
Maddie.
I'm going to go with the same but opposite strategy, Juan. I'm going to go against everything I was just saying, bashing the entire team this last 40 minutes. And just because you said that they're bad against left-handed pitching and we have Early and we have Tolley coming up, I'm going Red Sox sweep. It's just been that weird of a baseball season where, yeah, to your point, the series we think we're going to win, they lose. And now you think, okay, they're the worst team in baseball. And then they'll go and sweep the Mariners on the road. And we'll think, what's that about? And then they'll go back to being who they are, which is a 400, 450 winning percentage baseball team. But to do that, you know, like I said, we just came off losing 5 in a row. So we're going to win the next 2. And that's still a 3-8, you know, or 3-5 during that 8-game stretch. So, yeah, purely because this baseball season has been so bizarre. And just because, Juan, you're spitting facts on them being poor against left-handed pitching, even though Early's been struggling, I'm going the win for the Red Sox Saturday and Sunday, sweep on the road in Seattle. It'll be meaningless at the end of the season, but they'll give us something to cheer for and scratch our heads up one more time here.
Matt, the legend, picking the Boston Red Sox. That is going to do it for your Bastards of Boston Baseball on the rebranded Fire Breslow podcast. If you are interested once more in checking out some daily content, bastardsofbostonbaseball.com is where you can go. Everyone have a great one. Take care.